Listening Library presents Number the Stars by Lois Lowry, read for you by Blair Brown. 1. Why are you running? I'll race you to the corner, Ellen. Anne-Marie adjusted the thick leather pack on her back so that her school books balanced evenly. Ready? She looked at her best friend. Ellen made a face. No, she said, laughing. You know I can't beat you. My legs aren't as long. Can't we just walk like civilized people? She was a stocky 10-year-old, unlike lanky Anne-Marie. We have to practice for the athletic meet on Friday. I know I'm going to win the girls' race this week. I was second last week, but I've been practicing every day. Come on, Ellen, Anne-Marie pleaded, eyeing the distance to the next corner of the Copenhagen street. Please? Ellen hesitated, then nodded and shifted her own rucksack of books against her shoulders. Oh, all right. Ready? She said. Go! Shouted Anne-Marie, and the two girls were off, racing along the residential sidewalk. Anne-Marie's silvery blonde hair flew behind her, and Ellen's dark pigtails bounced against her shoulders. Wait for me, wailed little Kirsty, left behind, but the two older girls weren't listening. Anne-Marie outdistanced her friend quickly, even though one of her shoes came untied, as she sped along the street called Østerbrogade, past the small shops and cafes of her neighborhood, here in northeast Copenhagen. Laughing, she skirted an elderly lady in black who carried a shopping bag made of string. A young woman pushing a baby in a carriage moved aside to make way. The corner was just ahead. Anne-Marie looked up, panting, just as she reached the corner. Her laughter stopped. Her heart seemed to skip a beat. Halt! The soldier ordered in a stern voice. The German word was as familiar as it was frightening. Anne-Marie had heard it often enough before, but it had never been directed at her until now. Behind her, Ellen also slowed and stopped. Far back, little Kirsty was plodding along, her face in a pout because the girls hadn't waited for her. Anne-Marie stared up. There were two of them. That meant two helmets, two sets of cold eyes glaring at her, and four tall, shiny boots planted firmly on the sidewalk, blocking her path to home. And it meant two rifles, gripped in the hands of the soldiers. She stared at the rifles first. Then, finally, she looked into the face of the soldier who had ordered her to halt. "Why are you running?" the harsh voice asked. His Danish was very poor. 3 years, Anne-Marie thought with contempt. 3 years they've been in our country, and still they can't speak our language. I was racing with my friend, she answered politely. We have races at school every Friday, and I want to do well, so I... Her voice trailed away, the sentence unfinished. Don't talk so much, she told herself. Just answer them, that's all. She glanced back. Ellen was motionless on the sidewalk, a few yards behind her. Farther back, Kirsty was still sulking and walking slowly toward the corner. Nearby, a woman had come to the doorway of a shop and was standing silently, watching. One of the soldiers, the taller one, moved toward her. Anne-Marie recognized him as the one she and Ellen always called, in whispers, the giraffe, because of his height and the long neck that extended from his stiff collar. He and his partner were always on this corner. He prodded the corner of her backpack with the stock of his rifle. Anne-Marie trembled. What is in here? He asked loudly. From the corner of her eye, she saw the shopkeeper move quietly back into the shadows of the doorway, out of sight. School books, she answered truthfully.
Are you a good student? The soldier asked. He seemed to be sneering.
Yes.
What is your name?
Anne-Marie Johansson.
Your friend? Is she a good student, too?
He was looking beyond her at Ellen, who hadn't moved. Anne-Marie looked back, too, and saw that Ellen's face, usually rosy-cheeked, was pale, and her dark eyes were wide. She nodded at the soldier. Better than me, she said.
What is her name?
Ellen.
And who is this?
He asked, looking to Anne-Marie's side. Kirsty had appeared there suddenly, scowling at everyone. My little sister? She reached down for Kirsty's hand, but Kirsty,
always stubborn, refused it and put her hands on her hips defiantly. The soldier reached down and stroked her little sister's short, tangled curls. "Stand still, Kirsty," Anne-Marie ordered silently, praying that somehow the obstinate 5-year-old would receive the message. But Kirsty reached up and pushed the soldier's hand away. "Don't," she said loudly. Both soldiers began to laugh. They spoke to each other in rapid German that Anne-Marie couldn't understand.
"She is pretty, like my own little girl," the tall one said in a more pleasant voice.
Anne-Marie tried to smile politely.
"Go home, all of you. Go study your school books. And don't run. You look like hoodlums when you run."
The two soldiers turned away. Quickly, Anne-Marie reached down again and grabbed her sister's hand before Kirsty could resist. Hurrying the little girl along, she rounded the corner. In a moment, Ellen was beside her. They walked quickly, not speaking, with Kirsty between them, toward the large apartment building where both families lived. When they were almost home, Ellen whispered suddenly,
"I was so scared."
"Me too,"
Anne-Marie whispered back. As they turned to enter their building, both girls looked straight ahead toward the door. They did it purposely so that they would not catch the eyes or the attention of two more soldiers who stood with their guns on this corner as well. Kirsty scurried ahead of them through the door, chattering about the picture she was bringing home from kindergarten to show Mama. For Kirsty, the soldiers were simply part of the landscape, something that had always been there on every corner, as unimportant as lampposts throughout her remembered life.
"Are you going to tell your mother?" Ellen asked Anne-Marie as they trudged together up the stairs.
"I'm not. My mother would be upset."
"No, I won't either. Mama would probably scold me for running on the street."
She said goodbye to Ellen on the second floor where Ellen lived and continued on to the third, practicing in her mind a cheerful greeting for her mother, a smile, a description of today's spelling test in which she had done well. But she was too late. Kirsty had gotten there first.
"And he poked Anne-Marie's book bag with his gun, and then he grabbed my hair."
Kirsty was chattering as she took off her sweater in the center of the apartment living room.
"But I wasn't scared. Anne-Marie was, and Ellen too, but not me."
Mrs. Johansson rose quickly from the chair by the window where she'd been sitting. Mrs. Rosen, Ellen's mother, was there too in the opposite chair. They'd been having coffee together as they did many afternoons. Of course, it wasn't really coffee, though the mothers still called it that, having coffee. There had been no real coffee in Copenhagen since the beginning of the Nazi occupation. Not even any real tea. The mothers sipped at hot water flavored with herbs.
"Anne-Marie, what happened? What is Kirsty talking about?" her mother asked anxiously. "Where's Ellen?"
Mrs. Rosen had a frightened look.
"Ellen's in your apartment. She didn't realize you were here," Anne-Marie explained. "Don't worry, it wasn't anything. It was the two soldiers who stand on the corner of Osterbrigade. You've seen them. You know, the tall one with the long neck, the one who looks like a silly giraffe."
She told her mother and Mrs. Rosen of the incident, trying to make it sound humorous and unimportant. But their uneasy looks didn't change.
"I slapped his hand and shouted at him," Kirsty announced importantly.
"No, she didn't, Mama," Anne-Marie reassured her mother. "She's exaggerating, as she always does."
Mrs. Johansson moved to the window and looked down to the street below. The Copenhagen neighborhood was quiet. It looked the same as always, people coming and going from the shops, children at play, the soldiers on the corner. She spoke in a low voice to Ellen's mother.
"They must be edgy because of the latest resistance incidents. Did you read in De Friedanska about the bombings in Hilderode and Norderbro?"
Although she pretended to be absorbed in unpacking her school books, Anne-Marie listened, and she knew what her mother was referring to. De Friedanska, the Free Danes, was an illegal newspaper. Peter Nielsen brought it to them occasionally, carefully folded and hidden among ordinary books and papers, and Mama always burned it after she and Papa had read it. But Anne-Marie heard Mama and Papa talk, sometimes at night, about the news they received that way. News of sabotage against the Nazis, bombs hidden and exploded in the factories that produced war materials, and industrial railroad lines damaged so that the goods couldn't be transported. And she knew what resistance meant. Papa had explained when she overheard the word and asked.
The resistance fighters were Danish people, no one knew who because they were very secret, who were determined to bring harm to the Nazis however they could. They damaged the German trucks and cars and bombed their factories. They were very brave. Sometimes they were caught and killed.
I must go and speak to Ellen, Mrs. Rosen said, moving toward the door. You girls walk a different way to school tomorrow. Promise me, Anne-Marie, and Ellen will promise too.
We will, Mrs. Rosen, but what does it matter? There are German soldiers on every corner.
They will remember your faces, Mrs. Rosen said, turning in the doorway to the hall. It is important to be one of the crowd, always. Be one of many. Be sure that they never have reason to remember your face.
She disappeared into the hall and closed the door behind her.
He'll remember my face, Mama, Kirsty announced happily, because he said I look like his little girl. He said I was pretty.
If he has such a pretty little girl, why doesn't he go back to her like a good father? Mrs. Johansson murmured, stroking Kirsty's cheek. Why doesn't he go back to his own country?
Mama, is there anything to eat?
Anne-Marie asked, hoping to take her mother's mind away from the soldiers.
Take some bread and give a piece to your sister.
With butter?
Kirsty asked hopefully.
No butter, her mother replied. You know that.
Kirsty sighed as Anne-Marie went to the bread box in the kitchen.
I wish I could have a cupcake, she said, a big yellow cupcake with pink frosting.
Her mother laughed.
For a little girl, you have a long memory, she told Kirsty. There hasn't been any butter or sugar for cupcakes for a long time, a year at least.
When will there be cupcakes again?
When the war ends, Mrs. Johansson said. She glanced through the window down to the street corner where the soldiers stood, their faces impassive beneath the metal helmets. When the soldiers leave. 2. Who is the man who rides past?
Tell me a story, Anne-Marie,
begged Kirsty as she snuggled beside her sister in the big bed they shared.
Tell me a fairy tale.
Anne-Marie smiled and wrapped her arms around her little sister in the dark. All Danish children grew up familiar with fairy tales. Hans Christian Andersen, the most famous of the tale tellers, had been Danish himself.
Do you want the one about the Little Mermaid?
That one had always been Anne-Marie's own favorite. But Kirsty said no.
Tell one that starts with a king and a queen, and they have a beautiful daughter.
All right.
Once upon a time, there was a king, Anne-Marie began. And a queen, whispered Kirsty. Don't forget the queen.
And a queen.
They lived together in a wonderful palace, and... Was the palace named Amalienborg?
Kirsty asked sleepily.
Shh, don't keep interrupting or I'll never finish the story.
No, it wasn't Amalienborg. It was a pretend palace. Anne-Marie talked on, making up a story of a king and queen and their beautiful daughter, Princess Kirsten. She sprinkled her tale with formal balls, fabulous gold-trimmed gowns, and feasts of pink-frosted cupcakes, until Kirsty's deep, even breathing told her that her sister was sound asleep. She stopped, waited for a moment, half expecting Kirsty to murmur, "Then what happened?" But Kirsty was still. Anne-Marie's thoughts turned to the real king, Christian X, and the real palace, Amalienborg, where he lived, in the center of Copenhagen. How the people of Denmark loved King Christian. He was not like fairy tale kings, who seemed to stand on balconies giving orders to subjects, or who sat on golden thrones demanding to be entertained and looking for suitable husbands for their daughters. King Christian was a real human being, a man with a serious, kind face. She had seen him often when she was younger. Each morning he had come from the palace on his horse, Jubilee, and ridden alone through the streets of Copenhagen, greeting his people. Sometimes when Anne-Marie was a little girl, her older sister, Lisa, had taken her to stand on the sidewalk so that she could wave to King Christian. Sometimes he had waved back to the two of them and smiled. Now you are special forever, Lisa had told her once, because you have been greeted by a king. Anne-Marie turned her head on the pillow and stared through the partly opened curtains of the window into the dim September night. Thinking of Lisa, her solemn, lovely sister, always made her sad. So she turned her thoughts again to the king, who was still alive, as Lisa was not. She remembered a story that Papa had told her. Shortly after the war began, shortly after Denmark had surrendered, and the soldiers had moved in overnight to take their places on the corners. One evening, Papa had told her that earlier he was on an errand near his office, standing on the corner waiting to cross the street, when King Christian came by on his morning ride. One of the German soldiers had turned suddenly and asked a question of a teenage boy nearby.
"Who is that man who rides past here every morning on his horse?" the German soldier had asked.
Papa said he had smiled to himself, amused that the German soldier did not know. He listened while the boy answered.
"He is our king," the boy told the soldier. "He is the king of Denmark."
"Where is his bodyguard?" the soldier had asked.
"And do you know what the boy said?" Papa had asked Anne-Marie.
"She was sitting on his lap."
She was little then, only 7 years old. She shook her head, waiting to hear the answer. The boy looked right at the soldier, and he said,
"All of Denmark is his bodyguard."
Anne-Marie had shivered. It sounded like a very brave answer.
"Is it true, Papa?" she asked, "what the boy said?"
Papa thought for a moment. He always considered questions very carefully before he answered them.
"Yes," he said at last, "it is true. Any Danish citizen would die for King Christian to protect him."
"You too, Papa?"
"Yes."
"And Mama?"
"Mama too."
Anne-Marie shivered again.
"Then I would too, Papa, if I had to."
They sat silently for a moment. From across the room, Mama watched them, Anne-Marie and Papa, and she smiled. Mama had been crocheting that evening 3 years ago, the lacy edging of a pillowcase, part of Lisa's trousseau. Her fingers moved rapidly, turning the thin white thread into an intricate narrow border. Lisa was a grown-up girl of 18 then, about to be married to Peter Nielsen. When Lisa and Peter married, Mama said, Anne-Marie and Kirsty would have a brother for the very first time.
"Papa,"
Anne-Marie had said finally into the silence,
"sometimes I wonder why the king wasn't able to protect us. Why didn't he fight the Nazis so that they wouldn't come into Denmark with their guns?"
Papa sighed.
"We are such a tiny country," he said, "and they are such an enormous enemy. Our king was wise. He knew how few soldiers Denmark had. He knew that many, many Danish people would die if we fought."
"In Norway they fought," Anne-Marie pointed out.
Papa nodded.
"They fought very fiercely in Norway. They had those huge mountains for the Norwegian soldiers to hide in. Even so, Norway was crushed."
In her mind, Anne-Marie had pictured Norway as she remembered it from the map at school, up above Denmark. Norway was pink on the school map. She imagined the pink strip of Norway crushed by a fist.
"Are there German soldiers in Norway now, the same as here?"
"Yes," Papa said.
"In Holland, too," Mama added from across the room, "and Belgium and France."
"But not in Sweden,"
Anne-Marie announced, proud that she knew so much about the world. Sweden was blue on the map, and she had seen Sweden, even though she had never been there. Standing behind Uncle Henrik's house, north of Copenhagen, she had looked across the water, the part of the North Sea that was called the Kattegat, to the land on the other side.
"That is Sweden you are seeing," Uncle Henrik had told her. "You are looking across to another country."
"That's true," Papa had said. "Sweden is still free." And now, 3 years later, it was still true. But much else had changed. King Christian was getting old, and he had been badly injured last year in a fall from his horse, faithful old Jubilee, who had carried him around Copenhagen so many mornings. For days, they thought he would die, and all of Denmark had mourned. But he hadn't. King Christian X was still alive. It was Lisa who was not. It was her tall, beautiful sister, who had died in an accident 2 weeks before her wedding. In the blue carved trunk in the corner of this bedroom, Anne-Marie could see its shape even in the dark, were folded Lisa's pillowcases with their crocheted edges, her wedding dress with its hand-embroidered neckline, unworn, and the yellow dress that she had worn and danced in, with its full skirt flying, at the party celebrating her engagement to Peter. Mama and Papa never spoke of Lisa. They never opened the trunk. But Anne-Marie did from time to time when she was alone in the apartment. Alone, she touched Lisa's things gently, remembering her quiet, soft-spoken sister who had looked forward so to marriage and children of her own. Red-headed Peter, her sister's fiancé, had not married anyone in the years since Lisa's death. He had changed a great deal. Once he had been like a fun-loving older brother to Anne-Marie and Kirsty, teasing and tickling, always a source of foolishness and pranks. Now he still stopped by the apartment often, and his greetings to the girls were warm and smiling. But he was usually in a hurry, talking quickly to Mama and Papa about things Anne-Marie didn't understand. He no longer sang the nonsense songs that had once made Anne-Marie and Kirsty shriek with laughter, and he never lingered anymore. Papa had changed, too. He seemed much older and very tired, defeated. The whole world had changed. Only the fairy tales remained the same. "And they lived happily ever after," Anne-Marie recited, whispering into the dark, completing the tale for her sister, who slept beside her, one thumb in her mouth. 3. Where is Mrs. Hirsch? The days of September passed, one after the other, much the same. Anne-Marie and Ellen walked to school together and home again, always now taking the longer way, avoiding the tall soldier and his partner. Kirsty dawdled just behind them or scampered ahead, never out of their sight. The two mothers still had their coffee together in the afternoons. They began to knit mittens as the days grew slightly shorter and the first leaves began to fall from the trees because another winter was coming. Everyone remembered the last one. There was no fuel now for the homes and apartments in Copenhagen, and the winter nights were terribly cold. Like the other families in their building, the Johansons had opened the old chimney and installed a little stove to use for heat when they could find coal to burn. Mama used it, too, sometimes for cooking, because electricity was rationed now. At night, they used candles for light. Sometimes Ellen's father, a teacher, complained in frustration because he couldn't see in the dim light to correct his students' papers. "Soon we will have to add another blanket to your bed," Mama said one morning as she and Anne-Marie tidied the bedroom. "Kirsty and I are lucky to have each other for warmth in the winter," Anne-Marie said. "Poor Ellen, to have no sisters." "She will have to snuggle in with her Mama and Papa when it gets cold," Mama said, smiling. "I remember when Kirsty slept between you and Papa. She was supposed to stay in her crib, but in the middle of the night, she would climb out and get in with you," Anne-Marie said, smoothing the pillows on the bed. Then she hesitated and glanced at her mother, fearful that she had said the wrong thing, the thing that would bring the pained look to her mother's face. The days when little Kirsty slept in Mama and Papa's room were the days when Lisa and Anne-Marie shared this bed. But Mama was laughing quietly. "I remember, too," she said. "Sometimes she wet the bed in the middle of the night." "I did not," Kirsty said haughtily from the bedroom doorway. "I never, ever did that." Mama, still laughing, knelt and kissed Kirsty on the cheek. "Time to leave for school, girls," she said. She began to button Kirsty's jacket. "Oh, dear," she said suddenly. "Look, this button is broken right in half. Anne-Marie, take Kirsty with you after school to the little shop where Mrs. Hirsch sells thread and buttons. See if you can buy just one to match the others on her jacket. I'll give you some kroner. It shouldn't cost very much." But after school, when the girls stopped at the shop, which had been there as long as Anne-Marie could remember, they found it closed. There was a new padlock on the door and a sign, but the sign was in German. They couldn't read the words. "I wonder if Mrs. Hirsch is sick," Anne-Marie said as they walked away. "I saw her Saturday," Ellen said. "She was with her husband and their son. They all looked just fine. Or at least the parents looked just fine. The son always looks like a horror," she giggled. Anne-Marie made a face. The Hirsch family lived in the neighborhood, so they had seen the boy, Samuel, often. He was a tall teenager with thick glasses, stooped shoulders, and unruly hair. He rode a bicycle to school, leaning forward and squinting, wrinkling his nose to nudge his glasses into place. His bicycle had wooden wheels, now that rubber tires weren't available, and it creaked and clattered on the street. "I think the Hirsches all went on a vacation to the seashore," Kirsty announced. "And I suppose they took a big basket of pink frosted cupcakes with them," Anne-Marie said sarcastically to her sister. "Yes, I suppose they did," Kirsty replied. Anne-Marie and Ellen exchanged looks that meant, Kirsty is so dumb. No one in Copenhagen had taken a vacation at the seashore since the war began. There were no pink frosted cupcakes. There hadn't been for months. Still, Anne-Marie thought, looking back at the shop before they turned the corner, where was Mrs. Hirsch? The Hirsch family had gone somewhere. Why else would they close the shop? Mama was troubled when she heard the news. Are you sure? She asked several times. We can find another button someplace, Anne-Marie reassured her. Or we can take one from the bottom of the jacket and move it up. It won't show very much. But it didn't seem to be the jacket that worried Mama. Are you sure the sign was in German? She asked. Maybe you didn't look carefully. Mama, it had a swastika on it. Her mother turned away with a distracted look. Anne-Marie, watch your sister for a few moments and begin to peel the potatoes for dinner. I'll be right back. Where are you going? Anne-Marie asked as her mother started for the door. I want to talk to Mrs. Rosen. Puzzled, Anne-Marie watched her mother leave the apartment. She went to the kitchen and opened the door to the cupboard where the potatoes were kept. Every night now, it seemed, they had potatoes for dinner, and very little else. Anne-Marie was almost asleep when there was a light knock on the bedroom door. Candlelight appeared as the door opened, and her mother stepped in. Are you asleep, Anne-Marie?
No, why? Is something wrong?
Nothing's wrong, but I'd like you to get up and come out to the living room. Peter's here. Papa and I want to talk to you. Anne-Marie jumped out of bed, and Kirsty grunted in her sleep. Peter? She hadn't seen him in a long time. There was something frightening about his being here at night. Copenhagen had a curfew, and no citizens were allowed out after 8 o'clock. It was very dangerous, she knew, for Peter to visit at this time. But she was delighted that he was here. Though his visits were always hurried, they almost seemed secret somehow, in a way she couldn't quite put her finger on. Still, it was a treat to see Peter. It brought back memories of happier times. And her parents loved Peter, too. They said he was like a son. Barefoot, she ran to the living room and into Peter's arms. He grinned, kissed her cheek, and ruffled her long hair. You've grown taller since I saw you last, he told her. You're all legs. Anne-Marie laughed. I won the girls' foot race last Friday at school, she told him proudly. Where have you been? We've missed you. My work takes me all over, Peter explained. Look, I brought you something. One for Kirsty, too. He reached into his pocket and handed her 2 seashells. Anne-Marie put the smaller one on the table to save it for her sister. She held the other in her hands, turning it in the light, looking at the ridged, pearly surface. It was so like Peter to bring just the right gift. For your mama and papa, I brought something more practical, 2 bottles of beer. Mama and papa smiled and raised their glasses. Papa took a sip and wiped the foam from his upper lip. Then his face became more serious. Anne-Marie, he said, Peter tells us that the Germans have issued orders closing many stores run by Jews.
Jews? Anne-Marie repeated. Is Mrs. Hirsch Jewish? Is that why the button shop is closed? Why have they done that?
Peter leaned forward. It is their way of tormenting. For some reason, they want to torment Jewish people. It has happened in the other countries. They have taken their time here, have let us relax a little. But now it seems to be starting.
But why the button shop? What harm is a button shop?
Mrs. Hirsch is such a nice lady. Even Samuel, he's a dope, but he would never harm anyone. How could he? He can't even see with his thick glasses. Then Anne-Marie thought of something else.
If they can't sell their buttons, how will they earn a living?
Friends will take care of them, Mama said gently. That's what friends do. Anne-Marie nodded. Mama was right, of course. Friends and neighbors would go to the home of the Hirsch family, would take them fish and potatoes and bread and herbs for making tea. Maybe Peter would even take them a beer. They would be comfortable until their shop was allowed to open again. Then suddenly she sat upright, her eyes wide. Mama, she said, Papa, the Rosens are Jewish too. Her parents nodded, their faces serious and drawn. I talked to Sophie Rosen this afternoon, after you told me about the button shop, Mama said. She knows what is happening, but she doesn't think that it will affect them. Anne-Marie thought and understood. She relaxed.
Mr. Rosen doesn't have a shop. He's a teacher.
They can't close a whole school. She looked at Peter with the question in her eyes.
Can they?
I think the Rosens will be all right, he said. But you keep an eye on your friend Ellen, and stay away from the soldiers. Your mother told me about what happened on Osterbrigade.
Anne-Marie shrugged. She'd almost forgotten the incident.
It was nothing. They were only bored and looking for someone to talk to, I think.
She turned to her father.
Papa, do you remember what you heard the boy say to the soldier? That all of Denmark would be the king's bodyguard?
Her father smiled. I have never forgotten it, he said.
Well,
Anne-Marie said slowly,
now I think that all of Denmark must be bodyguard for the Jews as well.
So we shall be, Papa replied.
Peter stood. I must go, he said. And you, Longlegs, it is way past your bedtime now. He hugged Anne-Marie again. Later, once more in her bed beside the warm cocoon of her sister, Anne-Marie remembered how her father had said 3 years before that he would die to protect the king, that her mother would too. And Anne-Marie, 7 years old, had announced proudly that she also would. Now she was 10, with long legs and no more silly dreams of pink frosted cupcakes. And now she and all the Danes were to be bodyguard for Ellen and Ellen's parents and all of Denmark's Jews. Would she die to protect them? Truly? Anne-Marie was honest enough to admit there in the darkness, to herself, that she wasn't sure. For a moment she felt frightened, but she pulled the blanket up higher around her neck and relaxed. It was all imaginary anyway, not real. It was only in the fairy tales that people were called upon to be so brave, to die for one another. Not in real-life Denmark. Oh, there were the soldiers, that was true. And the courageous resistance leaders who sometimes lost their lives, that was true, too. But ordinary people like the Rosens and the Johansens? Anne-Marie admitted to herself, snuggling there in the quiet dark, that she was glad to be an ordinary person who would never be called upon for courage.
4. It will be a long night. Alone in the apartment while Mama was out shopping with Kirsty, Anne-Marie and Ellen were sprawled on the living room floor playing with paper dolls. They had cut the dolls from Mama's magazines, old ones she had saved from past years. The paper ladies had old-fashioned hairstyles and clothes, and the girls had given them names from Mama's very favorite book. Mama had told Anne-Marie and Ellen the entire story of Gone with the Wind, and the girls thought it much more interesting and romantic than the king and queen tales that Kirsty loved.
Come, Melanie, Anne-Marie said, walking her doll across the edge of the rug. Let's dress for the ball.
All right, Scarlett, I'm coming, Ellen replied in a sophisticated voice. She was a talented performer. She often played the leading roles in school dramatics. Games of the imagination were always fun when Ellen played. The door opened, and Kirsty stomped in, her face tear-stained and glowering. Mama followed her with an exasperated look and set a package down on the table.
I won't, Kirsty sputtered. I won't ever, ever wear them. Not if you chain me in a prison and beat me with sticks.
Anne-Marie giggled and looked questioningly at her mother. Mrs. Johansson sighed.
I bought Kirsty some new shoes, she explained. She's outgrown her old ones.
Goodness, Kirsty, Ellen said. I wish my mother would get me some new shoes. I love new things, and it's so hard to find them in the stores.
Not if you go to a fish store, Kirsty bellowed. But most mothers wouldn't make their daughters wear ugly fish shoes.
Kirsten, Mama said soothingly, you know it wasn't a fish store, and we were lucky to find shoes at all. Kirsty sniffed.
Show them, she commanded. Show Anne-Marie and Ellen how ugly they are.
Mama opened the package and took out a pair of little girls' shoes. She held them up, and Kirsty looked away in disgust.
You know there's no leather anymore, Mama explained, but they found a way to make shoes out of fish skin.
I don't think these are too ugly. Anne-Marie and Ellen looked at the fish skin shoes. Anne-Marie took one in her hand and examined it. It was odd looking. The fish scales were visible. But it was a shoe, and her sister needed shoes.
It's not so bad, Kirsty, she said, lying a little.
Ellen turned the other one over in her hand. You know, she said, it's only the color that's ugly.
Green, Kirsty wailed. I will never, ever wear green shoes.
In our apartment, Ellen told her, my father has a jar of black ink. Would you like these shoes better if they were black? Kirsty frowned.
Maybe I would, she said finally.
Well then, Ellen told her, tonight, if your mama doesn't mind, I'll take the shoes home and ask my father to make them black for you with his ink.
Mama laughed. I think that would be a fine improvement. What do you think, Kirsty?
Kirsty pondered.
Could he make them shiny? She asked. I want them shiny.
Ellen nodded. I think he could. I think they'll be quite pretty, black and shiny. Kirsty nodded.
All right, then, she said. But you mustn't tell anyone that they're fish. I don't want anyone to know.
She took her new shoes, holding them disdainfully, and put them on a chair. Then she looked with interest at the paper dolls.
Can I play too? Kirsty asked. Can I have a doll?
She squatted beside Anne-Marie and Ellen on the floor. Sometimes Anne-Marie thought Kirsty was such a pest, always butting in. But the apartment was small. There was no other place for Kirsty to play. And if they told her to go away, Mama would scold. Here, Anne-Marie said, and handed her sister a cut-out little girl doll. We're playing Gone with the Wind. Melanie and Scarlett are going to a ball. You can be Bonnie, she's Scarlett's daughter.
Kirsty danced her doll up and down happily.
I'm going to the ball,
she announced in a high, pretend voice. Ellen giggled. A little girl wouldn't go to a ball. Let's make them go someplace else. Let's make them go to Tivoli.
Tivoli? Anne-Marie began to laugh. That's in Copenhagen. Gone with the Wind is in America. Tivoli, 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 little Kirsty sang, twirling her doll in a circle.
It doesn't matter, because it's only a game anyway, Ellen pointed out. Tivoli can be over there, by that chair.
Come, Scarlett, she said, using her doll voice. We shall go to Tivoli to dance and watch the fireworks, and maybe there will be some handsome men there. Bring your silly daughter Bonnie, and she can ride on the carousel.
Anne-Marie grinned and walked her Scarlett toward the chair that Ellen had designated as Tivoli. She loved Tivoli Gardens in the heart of Copenhagen. Her parents had taken her there often when she was a little girl. She remembered the music and the brightly colored lights, the carousel and ice cream, and especially the magnificent fireworks in the evenings, the huge colored splashes and bursts of lights in the evening sky. I remember the fireworks best of all, she commented to Ellen.
Me too, Kirsty said. I remember the fireworks.
Silly, Anne-Marie scoffed. You never saw the fireworks. Tivoli Gardens was closed now. The German occupation forces had burned part of it, perhaps as a way of punishing the fun-loving Danes for their light-hearted pleasures. Kirsty drew herself up, her small shoulders stiff.
I did too, she said belligerently. It was my birthday. I woke up in the night and I could hear the booms, and there were lights in the sky. Mama said it was fireworks for my birthday.
Then Anne-Marie remembered. Kirsty's birthday was late in August, and that night, only a month before, she too had been awakened and frightened by the sound of explosions. Kirsty was right. The sky in the southeast had been ablaze, and Mama had comforted her by calling it a birthday celebration.
Imagine such fireworks for a little girl 5 years old,
Mama had said, sitting on their bed, holding the dark curtain aside to look through the window at the lighted sky. The next evening's newspaper had told the sad truth. The Danes had destroyed their own naval fleet, blowing up the vessels one by one as the Germans approached to take over the ships for their own use. How sad the king must be, Anne-Marie had heard Mama say to Papa when they read the news. How proud, Papa had replied. It had made Anne-Marie feel sad and proud, too, to picture the tall, aging king, perhaps with tears in his blue eyes, as he looked at the remains of his small navy, which now lay submerged and broken in the harbor.
I don't want to play anymore, Ellen, she said suddenly, and put her paper doll on the table.
I have to go home anyway, Ellen said. I have to help Mama with the house cleaning. Thursday is our New Year. Did you know that?
Why is it yours? Asked Kirsty. Isn't it our New Year, too?
No, it's the Jewish New Year. That's just for us. But if you want, Kirsty, you can come that night and watch Mama light the candles.
Anne-Marie and Kirsty had often been invited to watch Mrs. Rosen light the Sabbath candles on Friday evenings. She covered her head with a cloth and said a special prayer in Hebrew as she did so. Anne-Marie always stood very quietly, awed to watch. Even Kirsty, usually such a chatterbox, was always still at that time. They didn't understand the words or the meaning, but they could feel what a special time it was for the Rosens.
"Yes," Kirsty agreed happily. "I'll come and watch your mama light the candles, and I'll wear my new black shoes."
But this time was to be different. Leaving for school on Thursday with her sister, Anne-Marie saw the Rosens walking to the synagogue early in the morning, dressed in their best clothes. She waved to Ellen, who waved happily back. "Lucky Ellen," Anne-Marie said to Kirsty. "She doesn't have to go to school today."
"But she probably has to sit very, very still like we do in church," Kirsty pointed out. "That's no fun."
That afternoon, Mrs. Rosen knocked at their door but didn't come inside. Instead, she spoke for a long time in a hurried, tense voice to Anne-Marie's mother in the hall. When Mama returned, her face was worried, but her voice was cheerful.
"Girls," she said, "we have a nice surprise. Tonight, Ellen will be coming to stay overnight and to be our guest for a few days. It isn't often we have a visitor."
Kirsty clapped her hands in delight.
"But Mama," Anne-Marie said in dismay, "it's their New Year. They were going to have a celebration at home. Ellen told me that her mother managed to get a chicken someplace, and she was going to roast it, their first roast chicken in a year or more."
"Their plans have changed," Mama said briskly. "Mr. and Mrs. Rosen have been called away to visit some relatives, so Ellen will stay with us. Now, let's get busy and put clean sheets on your bed. Kirsty, you may sleep with Mama and Papa tonight, and we'll let the big girls giggle together by themselves." Kirsty pouted, and it was clear that she was about to argue. "Mama will tell you a special story tonight," her mother said, "one just for you."
"About a king?"
Kirsty asked dubiously.
"About a king, if you wish," Mama replied. "All right, then, but there must be a queen, too," Kirsty said.
Though Mrs. Rosen had sent her chicken to the Johansons, and Mama made a lovely dinner large enough for second helpings all around, it was not an evening of laughter and talk. Ellen was silent at dinner. She looked frightened. Mama and Papa tried to speak of cheerful things, but it was clear that they were worried, and it made Anne-Marie worry, too. Only Kirsty was unaware of the quiet tension in the room. Swinging her feet in their newly blackened and shiny shoes, she chattered and giggled during dinner. "Early bedtime tonight, little one," Mama announced after the dishes were washed. "We need extra time for the long story I promised about the king and queen." She disappeared with Kirsty into the bedroom.
"What's happening?"
Anne-Marie asked when she and Ellen were alone with Papa in the living room.
"Something's wrong. What is it?"
Papa's face was troubled. "I wish that I could protect you children from this knowledge," he said quietly. "Ellen, you already know. Now we must tell Anne-Marie." He turned to her and stroked her hair with his gentle hand. "This morning at the synagogue, the rabbi told his congregation that the Nazis have taken the synagogue lists of all the Jews, where they live, what their names are. Of course, the Rosens were on that list, along with many others."
"Why? Why did they want those names?"
"They plan to arrest all the Danish Jews. They plan to take them away, and we have been told that they may come tonight."
"I don't understand. Take them where?"
Her father shook his head. "We don't know where, and we don't really know why. They call it relocation. We don't even know what that means. We only know that it is wrong, and it is dangerous, and we must help." Anne-Marie was stunned. She looked at Ellen and saw that her best friend was crying silently.
"Where are Ellen's parents? We must help them, too."
"We couldn't take all three of them. If the Germans come to search our apartment, it would be clear that the Rosens were here. One person we can hide, not three. So Peter has helped Ellen's parents to go elsewhere. We don't know where. Ellen doesn't know either, but they are safe." Ellen sobbed aloud and put her face in her hands. Papa put his arm around her. "They are safe, Ellen, I promise you that. You will see them again quite soon. Can you try hard to believe my promise?" Ellen hesitated, nodded, and wiped her eyes with her hand.
"But Papa,
Anne-Marie said, looking around the small apartment with its few pieces of furniture. The fat stuffed sofa, the table and chairs, the small bookcase against the wall.
You said that we would hide her. How can we do that? Where can she hide?
Papa smiled. That part is easy. It will be as your mama said. You two will sleep together in your bed, and you may giggle and talk and tell secrets to each other. And if anyone comes, Ellen interrupted him.
Who might come? Will it be soldiers, like the ones on the corners?
Anne-Marie remembered how terrified Ellen had looked the day when the soldier had questioned them on the corner. I really don't think anyone will, but it never hurts to be prepared. If anyone should come, even soldiers, you two will be sisters. You are together so much, it will be easy for you to pretend that you are sisters. He rose and walked to the window. He pulled the lace curtain aside and looked down into the street. Outside, it was beginning to grow dark. Soon they would have to draw the black curtains that all Danes had on their windows. The entire city had to be completely darkened at night. In a nearby tree, a bird was singing. Otherwise, it was quiet. It was the last night of September. Go now and get into your nightgowns. It will be a long night. Anne-Marie and Ellen got to their feet. Papa suddenly crossed the room and put his arms around them both. He kissed the top of each head. Anne-Marie's blonde one, which reached to his shoulder, and Ellen's dark hair, the thick curls braided, as always, into pigtails. Don't be frightened, he said to them softly. Once I had three daughters. Tonight, I am proud to have three daughters again. 5. Who is the dark-haired one?
Do you really think anyone will come? Ellen asked nervously, turning to Anne-Marie in the bedroom. Your father doesn't think so. Of course not. They're always threatening stuff. They just like to scare people.
Anne-Marie took her nightgown from a hook in the closet. Anyway, if they did, it would give me a chance to practice acting. I'd just pretend to be Lisa. I wish I were taller, though. Ellen stood on tiptoe, trying to make herself tall. She laughed at herself, and her voice was more relaxed.
You were great as the Dark Queen in the school play last year, Anne-Marie told her. You should be an actress when you grow up.
My father wants me to be a teacher. He wants everyone to be a teacher, like him. But maybe I could convince him that I should go to acting school. Ellen stood on tiptoe again and made an imperious gesture with her arm. I am the Dark Queen, she intoned dramatically. I have come to command the night.
You should try saying, I am Lisa Johansson, Anne-Marie said, grinning. If you told the Nazis that you were the Dark Queen, they'd haul you off to a mental institution.
Ellen dropped her actress pose and sat down, with her legs curled under her on the bed.
They won't really come here, do you think? She asked again.
Anne-Marie shook her head.
Not in a million years. She picked up her hairbrush. The girls found themselves whispering as they got ready for bed. There was no need, really, to whisper.
They were, after all, supposed to be normal sisters, and Papa had said they could giggle and talk. The bedroom door was closed.
But the night did seem somehow different from a normal night, and so they whispered. How did your sister die, Anne-Marie? Ellen asked suddenly. I remember when it happened, and I remember the funeral. It's the only time I have ever been in a Lutheran church, but I never knew just what happened. I don't know exactly, Anne-Marie confessed. She and Peter were out somewhere together, and then there was a telephone call that there had been an accident. Mama and Papa rushed to the hospital, remember? Your mother came and stayed with me and Kirsty. Kirsty was already asleep, and she slept right through everything. She was so little then. But I stayed up, and I was with your mother in the living room when my parents came home in the middle of the night, and they told me Lisa had died. I remember it was raining, Ellen said sadly. It was still raining the next morning when Mama told me. Mama was crying, and the rain made it seem as if the whole world was crying.
Anne-Marie finished brushing her long hair and handed her hairbrush to her best friend. Ellen undid her braids, lifted her dark hair away from the thin gold chain she wore around her neck, the chain that held the Star of David, and began to brush her thick curls.
I think it was partly because of the rain. They said she was hit by a car. I suppose the streets were slippery, and it was getting dark, and maybe the driver just couldn't see.
Anne-Marie went on, remembering.
Papa looked so angry. He made one hand into a fist, and he kept pounding it into the other hand. I remember the noise of it. Slam, slam, slam.
Together they got into the wide bed and pulled up the covers. Anne-Marie blew out the candle and drew the dark curtains aside so that the open window near the bed let in some air.
"See that blue trunk in the corner," she said, pointing through the darkness. "Lots of Lisa's things are in there, even her wedding dress. Mama and Papa have never looked at those things, not since the day they packed them away."
Ellen sighed. She would have looked so beautiful in her wedding dress. She had such a pretty smile. I used to pretend that she was my sister, too.
"She would have liked that," Anne-Marie told her. "She loved you." "That's the worst thing in the world," Ellen whispered, "to be dead so young. I wouldn't want the Germans to take my family away to make us live someplace else. But still, it wouldn't be as bad as being dead."
Anne-Marie leaned over and hugged her.
"They won't take you away," she said. "Not your parents either. Papa promised that they were safe, and he always keeps his promises. And you are quite safe here with us."
For a while, they continued to murmur in the dark, but the murmurs were interrupted by yawns. Then Ellen's voice stopped. She turned over, and in a minute, her breathing was quiet and slow. Anne-Marie stared at the window where the sky was outlined, and a tree branch moved slightly in the breeze.
Everything seemed very familiar, very comforting.
Dangers were no more than odd imaginings, like ghost stories that children made up to frighten one another, things that couldn't possibly happen. Anne-Marie felt completely safe here in her own home, with her parents in the next room and her best friend asleep beside her. She yawned contentedly and closed her eyes. It was hours later, but still dark, when she was awakened abruptly by the pounding on the apartment door. Anne-Marie eased the bedroom door open quietly, only a crack, and peeked out. Behind her, Ellen was sitting up, her eyes wide. She could see Mama and Papa in their nightclothes moving about. Mama held a lighted candle, but as Anne-Marie watched, she went to a lamp and switched it on. It was so long a time since they had dared to use the strictly rationed electricity after dark that the light in the room seemed startling to Anne-Marie, watching through the slightly opened bedroom door. She saw her mother look automatically to the blackout curtains, making certain that they were tightly drawn. Papa opened the front door to the soldiers.
"This is the Johansson apartment?"
a deep voice asked the question loudly in the terribly accented Danish.
"Our name is on the door, and I see you have a flashlight," Papa answered. "What do you want? Is something wrong?" "I understand you are a friend of your neighbors, the Rosens, Mrs. Johansson," the soldier said angrily.
"Sophie Rosen is my friend, that is true," Mama said quietly.
"Please, could you speak more softly? My children are asleep."
"Then you will be so kind as to tell me where the Rosens are."
He made no effort to lower his voice.
"I assume they are at home, sleeping. It is 4 in the morning, after all," Mama said.
Anne-Marie heard the soldiers stalk across the living room toward the kitchen. From her hiding place in the narrow sliver of open doorway, she could see the heavily uniformed man, a holstered pistol at his waist, in the entrance to the kitchen, peering in toward the sink.
Another German voice said, "The Rosen's apartment is empty. We are wondering if they might be visiting their good friends, the Johansons."
"Well," said Papa, moving slightly so that he was standing in front of Anne-Marie's bedroom door, and she could see nothing except the dark blur of his back,
"as you see, you are mistaken. There is no one here but my family." "You will not object if we look around?"
The voice was harsh, and it was not a question.
"It seems we have no choice," Papa replied.
"Please don't wake my children," Mama requested again. "There is no need to frighten little ones."
The heavy booted feet moved across the floor again and into the other bedroom. A closet door opened and closed with a bang. Anne-Marie eased her bedroom door closed silently. She stumbled through the darkness to the bed.
"Ellen," she whispered urgently, "take your necklace off."
Ellen's hands flew to her neck. Desperately, she began trying to unhook the tiny clasp. Outside the bedroom door, the harsh voices and heavy footsteps continued.
"I can't get it open," Ellen said frantically. "I never take it off. I can't even remember how to open it."
Anne-Marie heard a voice just outside the door.
"What is here?"
"Shh," her mother replied. "My daughter's bedroom. They are sound asleep." "Hold still," Anne-Marie commanded. "This will hurt."
She grabbed the little gold chain, yanked with all her strength, and broke it. As the door opened and light flooded into the bedroom, she crumpled it into her hand and closed her fingers tightly. Terrified, both girls looked up at the three Nazi officers who entered the room. One of the men aimed a flashlight around the bedroom. He went to the closet and looked inside. Then, with a sweep of his gloved hand, he pushed to the floor several coats and a bathrobe that hung from pegs on the wall. There was nothing else in the room except a chest of drawers, the blue decorated trunk in the corner, and a heap of Kirsty's dolls piled in a small rocking chair. The flashlight beam touched each thing in turn. Angrily, the officer turned toward the bed.
"Get up," he ordered. "Come out here."
Trembling, the two girls rose from the bed and followed him, brushing past the two remaining officers in the doorway, to the living room. Anne-Marie looked around. These three uniformed men were different from the ones on the street corners. The street soldiers were often young, sometimes ill at ease, and Anne-Marie remembered how the giraffe had, for a moment, let his harsh pose slip and had smiled at Kirsty. But these men were older, and their faces were set with anger. Her parents were standing beside each other, their faces tense, but Kirsty was nowhere in sight. Thank goodness that Kirsty slept through almost everything. If they had wakened her, she would be wailing, or worse, she would be angry and her fists would fly.
"Your names?" the officer barked.
"Anne-Marie Johansson, and this is my sister."
"Quiet, let her speak for herself." "Your name?"
He was glaring at Ellen. Ellen swallowed.
"Lisa," she said, and cleared her throat. "Lisa Johansson."
The officer stared at them grimly. "Now," Mama said in a strong voice, "you have seen that we are not hiding anything. May my children go back to bed." The officer ignored her. Suddenly, he grabbed a handful of Ellen's hair. Ellen winced. He laughed scornfully.
"You have a blonde child sleeping in the other room, and you have this blonde daughter."
He gestured toward Anne-Marie with his head.
"Where did you get the dark-haired one?"
He twisted the lock of Ellen's hair.
"From a different father? From the milkman?"
Papa stepped forward.
"Don't speak to my wife in such a way. Let go of my daughter, or I will report you for such treatment." "Or maybe you got her someplace else," the officer continued with a sneer. "From the Rosens?"
For a moment, no one spoke. Then Anne-Marie, watching in panic, saw her father move swiftly to the small bookcase and take out a book. She saw that he was holding the family photograph album. Very quickly, he searched through its pages, found what he was looking for, and tore out three pictures from three separate pages. He handed them to the German officer, who released Ellen's hair.
"You will see each of my daughters, each with her name written on the photograph," Papa said.
Anne-Marie knew instantly which photographs he had chosen. The album had many snapshots, all the poorly focused pictures of school events and birthday parties, but it also contained a portrait, taken by a photographer, of each girl as a tiny infant. Mama had written in her delicate handwriting the name of each baby daughter across the bottom of those photographs. She realized, too, with an icy feeling, why Papa had torn them from the book. At the bottom of each page, below the photograph itself, was written the date, and the real Lisa Johansson had been born 21 years earlier.
"Kirsten Elizabeth,"
the officer read, looking at Kirsty's baby picture. He let the photograph fall to the floor.
"Anne-Marie,"
he read next, glanced at her and dropped the second photograph.
"Lisa Margrethe,"
he read finally, and stared at Ellen for a long, unwavering moment. In her mind, Anne-Marie pictured the photograph that he held. The baby, wide-eyed, propped against a pillow, her tiny hand holding a silver teething ring, her bare feet visible below the hem of an embroidered dress, the wispy curls. Dark. The officer tore the photograph in half and dropped the pieces on the floor. Then he turned, the heels of his shiny boots grinding into the pictures, and left the apartment. Without a word, the other two officers followed. Papa stepped forward and closed the door behind him. Anne-Marie relaxed the clenched fingers of her right hand, which still clutched Ellen's necklace. She looked down and saw that she had imprinted the Star of David into her palm.